Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. And today, August 14th, 2009, my guest is Marcel Lebrun, CEO of Radian 6. Welcome, Marcel.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Did I totally mispronounce your last name?
No, that's fine. There's about 12 ways to say it.
My husband was complaining. Yeah, my husband is pretty fluent in French and was trying to get me to say it, and he reminded me of my old Russian teachers who just were like, oh, forget it, say it the way you say it. So I thought I'd go with that.
Right.
Anyway, welcome, and I'm happy travels to you. I know you just took a red-eye flight, I think, last night from... Twitter blog.
That's right. Arrived a few hours ago and a little bit jet lagged, but it's a beautiful day here, so that kind of helps when you land and it's great out. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being with us. As I said, you're CEO of Radian 6. And before we turn to your background and even some of the things that I found very interesting on your own blog, I wanted to ask you, and you know, for the purposes of letting our audience know, what Radian 6 does, and a little bit about how it does it.
Okay. Well, the simplest way is to explain. We help both agencies and companies essentially track, analyze, and engage in conversations with their customers or stakeholders about their brand. So that's really in the realm of social media. So we're talking about, you know, blogs and videos and social networks and things like Twitter. And so we help them listen, and we help them understand the conversations and help them respond and participate in those conversations.
And you have some great integrations with Salesforce and I think Web Trends. So it can be a very powerful tool for an organization to use.
Yeah, the thing about the web is it's obviously when this kind of started, a lot of brands were looking at, oh, there's this power shift taking place, and my brand is now really not just what I say it is, but what's reflected in the conversations. And really the focus was, you know, managing your reputation online and how your brand appears. But really the social web has now pushed its way into almost every business process which touches the customer. So when you're doing customer support, and you know, you do it on the phone, and then, you know, in the 90s we added email as another channel, and really the social web is just another place where people can complain. But the cool thing is, instead of you forcing the customer through your process, you turn the lineup around and you line up for your customers. And so more brands are saying, oh, I have to do customer service online. Okay, there's another process. And they're saying, oh, what about sales? Well, you know, is it about building a total relationship with the customer, understanding them as a person? Social web plays a significant role there, even listening for needs and things like that. So we're seeing it push into all those areas. And that's why, as well, as a platform, we've integrated with a number of products that are in use by those professionals, like CRM systems for sales professionals or customer support professionals that use case tools and things like that, so that we can bring the right conversations to the right people where they need them, where they're doing their work.
Mm-hmm. And we know a lot of people seem to have just found out about Twitter. I get that comment a lot from people that I'm working with as a strategist, or even, you know, having been in the media for so many years, media professionals seem to, you know, I think Oprah was a, you know, kind of a paradigm shift in where at least Twitter stands in the universe of importance. What and sort of when was the genesis of Radian 6 as an organization?
Radian 6 started in 2006, and our CTO, his name's Chris Newton, is the founder of the company, and he really started to see in his own, he started a number of other companies, and he's kind of an inventor type person, and mm-hmm. he started to observe his own media consumption habits changing, and where he was hearing about things first changing, and where he was going to for advice changing, and starting to see the shift from, you know, a reliance on, let's say, more professional media to more of his community. And interestingly, his background is in network security, where he was looking to help companies analyze millions of streams of network traffic to try to avert, you know, security issues and intrusions on your network and things like that. And he said, you know, there's kind of a similar problem here. I need to help companies analyze millions of real-time conversations and turn that into something meaningful to a business person. Started to apply himself to that to that problem. In 2006, of course, the biggest, you know, it was mostly blogs that we were thinking about, and then all a lot of these other media types, you know, really grew over the last few years.
How did you become? How did you become part of the organization?
Well, I connected with Chris really through a mutual friend who was also an investor in the company that kind of helped him get going, and I started to help Chris out. You know, I'm kind of more the we're both technical, you know, engineering folks by background, but I gravitate more toward the business building side of things. And so just started to look at what Chris was building and really kind of help think through markets and pain points in, you know, clients. And as I started to really work with him and we started to talk to initially a lot of folks in public relations about what they're trying to do, I got really excited about not just the pain point and the need for this product, but the bigger transition that's going on that I think is revolutionizing how corporate marketing and communications is taking place, you know, because of the social web. So I really got interested in it.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a mind shift when you show a C-level of, you know, any title, you know, a pie graph that, you know, your tool produces that shows that, you know, 78% of conversation around the brand and the keywords that are most important, you know, are happening in forums or happening in blogs. And, you know, it's for me, it was always in the teens with companies that I've worked with your tool or in the microblogging space. So you could say, you know, some of that might be, depending on if you look, you know, and of course the tool allows you to look deeper, but, you know, could be people tweeting about articles. But if you look at, you know, the you know, for communications professionals, the push being, you know, this traditional model of reaching out to specific, you know, the Forbes of the world, let's say. The Forbes and Forbes.com come up in the 1.7, 1.6, 1 point something. And it's a real, I think, educational lesson in how much energy do we exert towards these activities aside from the deeper dive as to what's being said.
Right.
So I think that's fascinating.
It is, absolutely. And when you look at a number of things that have shifted, but companies now have the opportunity to go direct and have direct conversations. And before, you had to actually purchase that channel from an intermediary who had invested in building up the audience. And so whether it was Forbes or, you know, a TV network or things like that, I mean, that's why, you know, there's some challenges in those businesses as well, in that access to the audience is now much more readily available to a business. But the other big shift, of course, is the medium itself is, you know, the characteristics of the social web are very different, in that it's a, you know, two-way medium. It's a conversational medium, so you have the opportunity to behave very differently rather than, you know, what would be more traditional kind of interruption-based messaging that you push one way. You can now have more invitation-based conversations and do more listening and things like that. So that really changes how you can interact with customers and the kinds of conversations you can have that you just couldn't either afford to have before or couldn't physically have them because the channels weren't there to do it.
Yeah, there were you know, early, you know, stabs at trying to get something like this right. But, you know, interestingly, haven't, you know, or didn't succeed, didn't take off. You know, Nielsen tried its people, I think it was the people meter, where they were trying to figure out what actually, you know, attached to actual people, to actually figure out what they were listening to and how much, you know, how much of the, you know, revenue each of the pieces of media they were absorbing got. So if they're on a computer while listening to the radio but the TV's on in the background, who gets what piece of the pie? And obviously that's very hard to do, but if you, you know, look many years later, we have these great innovations that have really helped us break through that and get to a much deeper understanding of where activity is taking place and where, you know, sort of communities have formed themselves. And with that in mind, I really wonder, you know, what is Radian 6 considered to be, if anything, its landmark innovations?
Well, there's a lot of things that we focused on to really just make our tool very, very practical for the professional that's using it. And the way we built the product is we worked very closely with early adopter customers and sat down with them and said, show us how you do what you do. And so show us how you're currently listening, you know, to conversations and what you're spending your time. And even just simple administrative tasks that we observed that we were able to automate so that communications professionals could spend their time thinking about the conversation, not processing data, cutting and pasting, you know, trying to, you know, get rid of spam and find things. And one of the biggest things that we heard when we started this was, you know, we've seen lots of products out there with pretty charts and graphs and things like that, but we need to find all the conversations. In particular with agencies, it was, you know, we don't want our clients calling us saying, well, what about this? And we didn't know anything about it. So we really need a comprehensive tool, and we spent a lot of our R&D making sure. Right now we index, I think, almost between 6.5 and 7 million conversations per day that match topics that our customers care about. So there's a lot of content, and finding all of that in all of the different places, you know, 600-700 plus video sites that are YouTube-like, even though most of us only know about YouTube, and you got to cover all those places, and so things like that, but also just innovations around, you know, how you help people understand who they are in terms of their social profile, or how you help the organization listen. So you can't have, for example, one person in a large company do all the listening, nor can you have every person do all the listening, because that doesn't make sense. So how do you get, you know, the conversations that matter to the customer service folks to them, and then how do you help them collaborate, internally converse, so they're not tripping over each other and responding, and all those kinds of little things that we worked out with customers along the way. So it's really just a, you know, almost like when you think of a CRM tool, there's nothing really super magical about it other than it just helps you get organized and helps you do what you need to do well and takes all that administrative stuff out of the way so you can focus on conversations.
So in terms of where, you know, the organization is now, you have, having worked with you as an organization before and, you know, probably continuing to. It's, you know, what I think is very interesting is, you know, the commitment to customer service. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you offer, you know, some other companies that might be considered competitors, you know, would charge, let's say, for training sessions and things like that. You offer a lot of training. And what's sort of the impetus behind giving away so much training for free?
Well, first of all, this is, and as we grow, we're finding that the generations of new customers that are coming on are wanting that help, not just how do I set up a dashboard and set up my topics, but what do I do with this, and how do I help a client understand what this means. And so we've set up a customer service team. They're amazing folks, and they're there to help with whatever people call with, and will help you know, our agency partners do client pitches if they need help and they're saying, gee, I'm trying to figure out, you know, with this brand, and we'll help them set up their topics. We'll help them think through that. We do training. All that's really included in our, you know, software as a service fee. And we're going to actually be doing even more of that. We're investing ourselves a lot in content creation, and we're bringing some more people on board to help tell more stories. And you look at our website, we've got, you know, some more case studies we've done. We've been doing some webinars. You know, recently we had folks from GE on talking about what they're doing, and we had senior vice president of digital media for National Geographic Channel talking about how the social web's changing TV for them. And we're just going to try to bring forth more of these stories so people can go, oh, hey, I can apply that to my business, and really kind of be advocates for the cool things that are going on in this space and help spread that information around. I'd say we're doing okay job with it today, but we really want to get a lot better at that.
Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, you know, Corey Hartland, the customer service rep, I don't know if he would be account manager or what his title is anymore, but, I mean, he's been fantastic in trying to really reach out one-on-one. But what I'd say is, you know, one of the pieces of the pie from sort of the user end being part, you know, in being part of an organization is, you know, the nice thing about the training being available is that it helps build trust.
Yeah.
That the results are accurate and that the questions that might come from clients from, an agency perspective, you know, are either, you know, answerable right in the room or are a email or phone call away. What about for hyper niche type of topics where the search may be more difficult to get down to a list, and you know there are questions about, you know, is this, you know, are these top 25 influencers really the right top 25?
Right. Well, so you're talking about, let's say, a brand that's just, you know, starting out, very little mentioned online. Yeah. Well,
or that, you know, the classic example is a new one that comes to market, but the influencers are going to be mentioning one powerhouse in the market all the time. And they could be very, you know, very open to the new product, but because there's, you know, really a monopoly in the space, it's difficult to discern who you want to reach and who you don't.
Oh, that's great. I mean, one of the things we talk about, and this is a great question that we could put a whole piece of content on, you know, and describe, but the cool thing is this, is now you have the opportunity because of the social web to I call it expand your field of listening. So listening to mentions of your brand is one small dimension of the art of the possible in the social web. You have the opportunity to listen to a broader industry conversation. You have the opportunity to listen for point of needs. You have the opportunity to listen to what's, you know, being talked about around your competitors. In the example you used, if there's a dominant brand that has a lot of conversation, well, try and understand what the interactions are with them, who their advocates are, who their, you know, detractors are, why, you know, are they saying those things?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so much you can do, and then you can really work to grow, become, use the word trust earlier. I mean, the cool thing about the social web is that, you know, through transparent, honest participation, you can build trust, and then you get invited to be an insider in a community as you demonstrate that you belong there. And so if you're, I used an example on my blog a while back around Tylenol, I think it was Tylenol or aspirin, and the arthritis community. If you go to, you know, Tylenol's website, you'll see they've got these different segments, which are market segments, I guess, that they're interested in, and arthritis is one of them. But if you were to look at the conversation around arthritis, it's massive compared to the conversation about Tylenol. And in fact, I came up with a term called, you know, share of conversation, which is different than share of voice. And this is saying when people talk about arthritis, how often do they talk about Tylenol? And what we found is it was something like 0.6% of the time. So the arthritis community isn't talking about Tylenol. So what are they talking about? Understand your community's conversations and then think about how you can address the needs that you're hearing and add value as a brand so that you can become an insider to that community and that your value will grow through them observing your contribution and your right to engage in more direct conversation grows, and you know, so will awareness of your brand and things like that. So you'll be seen as a brand who's helping with the real issues versus what you think the issues might be. So there's all kinds of opportunities for companies who don't have a lot of conversation about them to really grow their their social capital through just very smart engagement on their industry and the broader conversations.
So what would you say to people that are, and I'm looking at the charts of your example. I'll make sure there's a link on my website, jenniferlindsay.com, but it's mediaphilosopher.com where you blog, and there are a couple of charts. The second one shows the share of conversation around arthritis, and then Tylenol, which was the most dominant of the brands that you measured in an earlier chart in terms of, you know, I guess like pain relievers. So it's very interesting because Tylenol came out with 1.7% of the conversation compared to 98.3% for arthritis. So clearly something to take into, well, to make an actionable plan around. But you know, in terms of, you know, the way that an agency or someone with maybe more of a steeped background in a particular area that is looking at this tool in a certain way, you know, would you say that this tool is really, you know, or this product is really, well, I guess let me preface this by saying there's the conversation around influence, and there's a conversation around engagement.
Yes.
To me, they seem like different things. Mm-hmm. Influence equals usually reaching out to a person in more of an agency way, or even in a media sense, you know, where's the person, what's their email or phone number so that I can contact them to give them things or show them things or give them proof points or whatever.
Yeah.
But in an engagement scenario, I feel like more doors possibly open up. So the question really between those two is, to me, comes around forums. So how do you create, first of all, how do you factor in, if you're using this tool to look at influence, mm-hmm. what do you do when forums are the dominant form of conversation?
Okay. So I agree the idea of influence and engagement are different. Engagement has also is a funny term because it's used by different people different ways, so you have to dig in underneath that word a little bit before you start talking about it to understand
right.
what you mean. But when we talk about influence, there we're talking about the ability to propagate ideas. We talk about maybe the number of people that are likely to, you know, listen or trust or act upon something that someone says for a given topic. Now, the first important point of influence is it is extremely topic-related. Popularity is not. So you might say, you know, Michael Arrington at TechCrunch is popular. There's a lot of people that know about him. Oprah is very popular. Now, Oprah's probably not influential with respect to certain topics, and she's very influential with respect to others. Just like Michael Arrington, you know, if he talks about Web 2.0 companies, people are listening. If he talks about women's fashion, they're probably not. And so if you're looking at the world of influence, you have to include metrics of popularity. So that might be things like how much traffic goes to their website and things like that. And then you have to include other metrics that are topic related. So how often do they write about this relative to other things they write about. When they write about this, do other people who also write about this link to them? So you don't only have linking behavior that, you know, like a TechCrunch will always get links, but you have topically relevant linking behavior. And basically, what we've done is we've aggregated probably it's about 10 or 12 different social metrics, and this is I get pretty excited about this idea. The thing that's really powerful about the social web is that it's a medium that not only contains a message, but it contains an action. So the actions that people take when they interact with the media are recorded in the medium. They're digital breadcrumbs. And we actually track all those digital breadcrumbs. When you look at Radian 6, there's the Google-like part of our crawler, which indexes content just like Google does and everyone else does. The other half is this metrics crawler that goes in and tracks all these digital breadcrumbs. And it's like, you know, people say actions speak louder than words. If I'm holding a sign on the street corner in New York and I, you know, buy this and you're looking at me and everyone's ignoring it, you know, that tells you more than the words. However, if I'm drawing a crowd, then you're more likely to pay attention. And so we instinctively look at those behaviors in our own minds to determine whether something's worth our attention. And so we bring all those metrics together and we roll them up into something called influence, which basically is not a pure, there's no perfect math for this, but it basically tells you, you know, if there's 100 people that you care about who, you know, seem to be the experts on the topic of beer and your, you know, Molson breweries, here's the people who are the beer influencers that you should be looking at. And we actually, in our tool, allow the client to kind of adjust those a little bit because they might say, well, for my particular application right now, I'm really interested in those who have a lot of attention. Okay, or maybe on the other hand, I'm interested in those who really focus deeply on this topic. I want highly, highly targeted, but I don't want volume. So they can adjust the dials a bit depending on what they're trying to do.
Which is where the importance of training comes in.
Exactly.
Of course, changing those dials can be very, very important. But there was something that you said about no perfect math for the influence piece of this, and it goes back to kind of what I was getting at with, you know, sort of the influence model around agencies seems to be about direct contact with people. So what happens when, you know, they've adjusted, you know, the levers, they've done all of the sophisticated tactics they need to do, and they're still coming out with 78% of conversation happening in forums. How do they then, does the influence model work? How do you reach out to a forum versus engaging with a forum?
Right. Well, a forum is, so there's communities and there's people. And with social media, because there's so many different things, the model looks a little different depending on the media type. In a forum, you have people as well, right? They have their IDs. And you have the forum itself as a community, just like a blog. You know, if you go to chrisbrogan.com, is it an influencer, one person, or is it a community? Well, it's a bit of both because there's, you know, a whole bunch of people there commenting and engaging, and then there's a person who kind of owns the place. With a forum, you might find, you know, it's maybe a little less owned by one person. But this is where, you know, the agencies really do what they do best, which is build trust, manage relationships, you know, communicate persuasively, those kinds of things. The difference is rather than a quote-unquote pitch, I mean, you could take that approach, is, you know, what when you look at traditional media, one of the things that agencies had as value is they had already built to some extent trust relationships with a community. So someone might say, well, I know the, you know, editor that covers this space at this magazine, and I know the, you know, and so therefore you're working with an agency who has already some degree of knowledge and some degree of trust and relationship there. And same thing happens in the social web, except now it's a more distributed group rather than, you know, three or four people who write about the space. It might be 300. So it's a little different, but the same process can take place. And so what do you do is, instead of necessarily just saying, well, get me a phone number and call, if this is a top influencer, let's say in the beer topic, or this forum is a top forum in the beer topic, how do you introduce yourself into that forum? How do you become invited and welcomed in that community, and how do you build trust in there so that you can then earn the right to add your thing, you know, and say, hey, guys, we just, you know, released this new product. We'd love to get your feedback and check it out. And if you just go in there cold and do that, you know, you may be ignored, but if you build up your capital over time, then it might be like, hey, all of a sudden you move people from strangers to friends, and then from friends to fans, and then they're more than willing to be your advocates and actually help you out as you help them out, you know, just like the real world. So
what would you say to people that ignore the community-driven aspects of what shows up in a particular search? So, you know, because, you know, maybe there isn't, there's a perception that it's too difficult, or there's not a real knowledge about how, or there's preconceptions about the type of people that are involved in communities, that gets tossed, you know, that the communities versus the people, communities might get tossed out of the equation. What do you think's lost there?
Well, I think there's all kinds of, and there's a lot of companies that are at that stage for a number of valid reasons that take time to overcome. And it might just be, you know, for when that happens, you tend to maybe you find a place that appears to be more on the hostile side to your brand, let's say. And you think, okay, or it contains, you know, negative conversation. And so then brands might go, well, do we really want to, you know, participate in that? Or sometimes brands will say, well, you know, once we show up, aren't we going to get buried? You know, we know there's an issue here. So once we show up and say, hey, we're working on that, are we going to get hammered with, you know, oh, and this, and this, and this? And so there's these kind of, you know, is the water cold? And when once you dive in, it's not so bad. But then prior to diving in, there's some fears. And or, you know, the lawyers go, oh, wait a minute, you got to be careful what you say because it's recorded, all those things. So, and then a lot of times brands kind of get through all that stuff. Unfortunately, sometimes it's crisis driven, right? So you end up, you know, like a couple weeks ago, a local musician here on the East Coast, you know, recorded a music video. I don't know if you saw it or not. His name's Dave Carroll. He went on a United Airlines flight and they broke his Taylor guitar, and spent a few months trying to get his guitar repaired and, you know, get them to pay for it. Didn't work out. So then he said, okay, I'm going to write a song about this. So he did. And this thing just skyrocketed. I think it's somewhere around 5 million views now on YouTube, and he ended up on CNN. And all of a sudden the brands go, okay, we just, you know, unfortunately we get forced in and we just can't do it. Now we've got to now participate in this thing and we have to listen. A lot of brands get smarter and do it earlier and see it more as an opportunity. So what you find is it's far more positive medium than is perhaps common understanding, because these United Broke My Guitar stories end up on CNN, so everybody thinks the social web is a bad place where you get killed if you do something wrong. But what you end up finding is, just like in the real world, people are much more likely to be your advocate and to be really excited when you engage with them, because it means you care and they're worth your time. So if you respond to someone's issue and they go, this is what we hear all the time, is that act alone is remarkable and people become fans just because you responded. So it's a much friendlier, warmer place, and, you know, we're strong advocates of diving into the middle of whatever medium and just being transparent, and it's not so bad.
And Southwest Airlines, we should say, is a fantastic example of, using communities, forums, blogs, just about every form
yeah.
of media in the social web to try to help customers. So, you know,
yeah.
there are airlines that you could use as an example if you were another airline that you could point out and sort of see what they've gone through. And, of course, they've had pain points, but, you know, clearly have a successful program in hand at the moment.
Yep.
One of the things that I wanted to sort of move to is something that you had written in February on your blog, which looks like I think it's your most recent post.
Yeah, I'm not a hardcore blogger by any means, so I'm.
I love the title, Media Philosopher.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. So one of the topics that I saw, you know, and this is sort of irreverent, but I wanted to ask you about it because I think it might be interesting to people. So one of your more recent posts was why social media measurement is like gourmet cooking.
Yeah.
You want to explain that one to us?
Yes. So if, you know, I start with the analogy that if all we have is bread and water, then it's pretty easy to understand what we're going to have for dinner tonight because it's all we
mm-hmm.
have to work with. So we're going to have bread and water. The other thing is, if all we have is bread and water, then it's pretty easy to understand, you know, there's not a lot you can do with that, so it's easier to agree on things. Now, all of a sudden, you go to an environment where you have tons of ingredients and all kinds of possibilities, then it's, you know, much more complex to know how to put a meal together, but, of course, the possibilities are greater. And the analogy I was drawing is that when we look at the metrics of, and here I'm not talking about customer support or sales or these other functions, but more the marketing advertising world, the traditional media mechanisms that were used when you'd sit in a room and say, okay, we're launching this product, here's what the brand means, you know, brand means X, Y, Z, we're going to call it this, and then we're going to determine which you know, stories we're going to put together and where we're going to push those, and it might be a magazine article or an ad or a television ad or things like that, you had very little metrics to work on. You might have reach and frequency. You know, I know this went to 300,000 people, but that's not, you know, that's it. And there's a huge conversation about social media measurement. And a lot of people saying, well, how do you measure social media? Almost as if it's a bigger problem to measure social media than it is traditional media.
Mm.
But the inverse is true. The thing is in traditional media, everyone has landed on a standard for measurement. So you might say, you know, in PR, for instance, it often uses an ad equivalency measurement to say, well, we got an article in this magazine. It was half a page cost $30,000. Therefore, this is a $30,000 earned media buy. There's your ROI. Well, is that really worth $30,000? It's just that we agreed that it is. It's an intermediary metric and not a very good one, but because we have nothing else to go by, we've landed on it. With the social web, we can measure everything. There's so much that you can measure. And, you know, I can, for example, you talked earlier about we've integrated with web analytics. You do a product launch, you reach out to 35 influencers, you get 15 articles. You know, we can tell you exactly how many are, you know, of all those articles, how many people came from them, how many downloaded the white paper, how many bought the product. All these things are measurable. As such, it's also more difficult to get everyone to agree on a standard approach to say, how well did I do in my job and how well did you do in your job? So it's a bit more like a gourmet chef who, you know, is going to have his meal and, you know, they'll debate and discuss, but they're not going to agree on what makes the best foie gras.
Mm-hmm,
or,
mm-hmm.
So some
Which
people agree with that.
Ratatouille for some reason, but yeah,
sure.
whatever the food is
yeah.
that they're concerned with.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a fascinating analogy because everybody can sort of relate to food. And you touched on, you actually said the word, the phrase ROI or the initials, the acronym ROI, in talking through it. Do you feel like your tool really helps companies with understanding ROI, answering questions of clients regarding ROI?
It's definitely part of the equation, and here's what I would say, first of all, about ROI. Well, ROI, in its purest sense, is a very specific definition. It's return on investment. And so if I invest $1,000, what return did I get? And most of the time, however, when people say, what's the ROI, they're actually not, they don't really mean what's the ROI. They kind of take a broader definition to say, what's the business, you know, what do I have to prove that my investment was worthwhile? So if, for example, it's an investment in customer support, you know, I've done customer support in lots of different environments. You no matter what you're doing, whether you're doing it on the phone, you know, let's take whether it's a company like Comcast or United Airlines or Radiant 6 or anyone, how much customer support is too much and how much is not enough? Well, yeah, it's very, you know, if you have not enough, people aren't going to be happy. Too much, you can't afford it, and it takes a human mind to figure out where that line is. But what you can do with the social web is I can very clearly measure and compare what is it costing me to support customers, what benefits do I get by doing it online, what benefits do I get by activating a community and helping my customers support each other, and how can I reduce my costs and increase the value relative to what I'm doing in my call center, and we can measure that. Or you can take something like listening for the point of need, which is one of my favorite concepts. Rather than interrupt you with, hey, I think you need this, if you can listen for expressions of point of need and engage with people in a way that's helping them with what they're asking for, you can measure how much have I spent on effort doing that and how many leads and ultimately customers did I generate through that activity. And so you get a very clear ROI there. Things that are more difficult, like if you say, from a PR perspective, I'm investing in relationships with influencers. Well, whether you're using a tool like ours or no tool at all, that's just going to be a more difficult thing that's going to have a higher orientation toward the intangible, because relationships are just harder to measure, the ultimate value of them. So certain things, very clear, very easy to measure ROI. Other things have, you know, a little more the fuzzy side that you have to kind of throw in the mix.
Right. I think that's a great point, because I think, you know, a lot of this is relationship building that's different than what has traditionally been the case, where, as you said, you know, I know Editor X, and that can actually be a selling point that can win you an account. Whereas now it's, you know, perhaps that you know a particular community really well, or we have a foothold in, you know, a particular community around whatever a particular range of keywords are, and can, you know, we've built the trust, built the authority within the community to show that there's care and a reason to trust, reason to listen, and all of those things, that which I think, you know, you'd agree, take time. I mean, they certainly don't come without that piece of time. So along with this, and it's a little off track of Radiant 6, but I know, you know, you've been in your background, you've been an investor, and, you know, you've been a businessman. So, putting your businessman's cap on and investment cap on, a question I get from a lot of people at that level that are, you know, they've made the investment and they're actually working in the organization and, you know, trying to take advantage of the economy to build something while it's down, but need to do so quickly, need to see a return quickly, otherwise they need to, you know, move on or in the in an R&D process. How would you answer the question that I get a lot, which is, do I need to have a dedicated person to do this? Or SMBs ask this all the time. Small and medium businesses are asking me all the time, well, don't I need to have a dedicated person doing this? What would your answer be? You know, given that you're given it, let's assume that your tool is one of the central pieces of learning and engaging.
Well, you know, I'd almost ask the question, do you need to have a dedicated person to answer your phone?
Mm.
And if you, and it all of a sudden puts you in a different mental place, because you look in the company, well, perhaps does have somebody, let's say, at the front desk that answers the phone and says, oh, you know, you want to talk to someone about our product, I'll transfer you to sales. Oh, you want to talk to the CEO, what about? Let me see if I can, you know, help you there. But also, I bet you everybody in your company has a phone, but they don't necessarily all engage with everyone. So it's a communication medium, and the social web is a multi-purpose communication medium. So really, it's a really what I think is important is to, that social media starts to become less of the focus, and what you're doing on the social web becomes more of the focus. So the first question is, what do you want to use it for? Are you wanting to support customers? Are you wanting to
the goal?
Start with that, and then based on that, I'd be better positioned to answer whether you need a dedicated person to do this. But I'm a fan of figuring out how to integrate the business functions that you need to do and that you intend to use the social web to do deeper into your organization. Now, there's lots of things you've been doing forever, like supporting customers, that there's new opportunities. But then also the social web also affords you the opportunity to do some new things like community management. So, you know, there may be a benefit there. But if they're not sure and they want to get started, I mean, even UPS, for example, they're a very large organization, and they're doing amazing things with engaging with customers online. They started using, you know, admin staff that, when they had a few minutes free, would go through and start looking at, you know, UPS and late delivery and figure out how they can, you know, respond and help broker, you know, issues they would see. So you can really start small, and it's kind of like once you do and once you start to see the benefit, you'll be compelled to, you know, to scale that up, but then you'll have evidence, and whether intuitive or quantitative evidence, but you'll have it to be able to, you know, base your subsequent growth on.
I think that is such a great answer. I'm going to steal that. I just want to let you know, because I get asked it so many times. So I'm going to reverse the question. I'm going to ask you, what do you get asked the most?
From who?
You, like me, are probably either in public places or in private places, but, you know, more in terms of, you know, when you're out speaking or when you're representing the company, you know, more, you know, broadly in sort of a speaking sense. What are you, what's the sort of generic question that you get?
Here's two questions that come out a lot, and they're related. The first one is, what are the biggest mistakes you're seeing? Like, what should I not do? What are you seeing that people are doing wrong? That's one. And another one might be, you know, what's the yellow brick road? You know, how do I start? Like, where, you know, how do I walk before I run? Should I walk before I run? Do I just dive in? Can I, you know, is there a way to dip your toe in this thing and then go further? So those are two key questions. And the first one's fairly easy to answer. The biggest mistake I see brands, agencies, people, whatever do, is to carry the mindset of mass marketing onto the social web. So there's a kind of pool of advice out there which says, I call it get AX, so get a blog, get a Facebook account, get a Twitter account, get on this, get on that. And so the brands go, okay, we got to get us some of this stuff, so let's get on. And they get on these channels, and they start to push the messages that they've always been pushing, and they wonder why it's not working. And then they might just stop because it's not really, you know, it's costing them money and they're not getting anything out of it. That's the biggest mistake that I see, is that it's not a medium that's designed to be a soapbox. It won't work. So I often advise companies, and if I switch it back to the yellow brick road piece, is that before you consider yourself ready to, let's say, tell your own story, whether it's through a blog or a community, why don't you start by listening and engaging in the conversations about your industry on other people's communities, which will help you understand how this place works and will equip you to be much more effective in telling your own story later down the road when you're ready for that, and you'll have earned the right. If you can't, as a brand, let's just take, if you're a company like us and you say, okay, let's say when we started, there were no mentions of Radiant 6. So we start listening to conversations about social media marketing, and we start to get to know the opinion makers and what they had to say and then start to participate meaningfully in that conversation. If you can't figure out how to do that, then you're not going to do very well with a blog. So start with a very conversational approach, responding, conversing, and then, you know, the tell your story part is something you want to do. And you always do very little of that. I mean, people are interested in that, so it's okay to let people in the tent in your company and understand what drives, you know, your employees and where you're going next and those kinds of things. They don't want to hear, you know, you always be sending one-way messages. That's really the biggest mistake. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, going out. I mean, one of the classic scenarios is, you know, in terms of crisis communications, especially, you know, when, you know, you might see something and flag, you know, someone who's important to the company to say, you know, I think we should probably set the record straight on a couple pieces of this and, you know, just let everyone know how to contact you or the organization directly if they have any questions because of what's come up here. And they have a blog, but the blog doesn't have comments enabled.
Right.
It's hard to use the comments on someone else's blog if you don't enable them on your own because it's a one-way, you know, it's a one-way street. It's that two-way conversation that really, really helps.
Right, so, or even more subtly, you have the comments turned on in your blog, but your post just isn't asking for conversation. You know, so your post looks like a press release, and it's not saying, talk to me, and so it's not inviting it, even if they're physically on. They wonder why no one's responding, but you just slightly change your mindset and all of a sudden you realize people do want to talk.
Right. And people like Chris Brogan, who is a great person in addition to being, you know, a very revered expert, you know, does a great job of this. I hopefully do this in my blog where I actually solicit comments. Sometimes I'll do a blog post and I don't have the answer. But I'm really hoping that I'll get some comments or emails even privately if people don't want to, you know, engage that way, or they'll friend me on Facebook and email me that way to, you know, to give their point of view. And, you know, that I think is sort of the great thing that can happen, where you have this two-way dialogue happening wherever people want it to happen. And I think that's the other thing, too, that we have to realize in this whole process of what Radiant 6 does, what solutions like yours does, is takes into account the fact that there are all these different mediums, and people more and more, I think, are getting very agnostic to where they engage.
Right.
So one question I'd have for you is, how does Radiant 6, and is it, measuring mobile? Because it isn't a breakout of one of the media types in
right.
when you get into the tool and you get into the granular.
What
are the plans for that? Because I think, you know, I'm a huge, you know, people have heard me ad nauseum talk about mobile, and how important it is. What's your answer for that?
Well, let me ask you, what do you largely use on your mobile device in terms of
applications?
Yeah. Do you use Facebook?
I have a BlackBerry,
no.
And I'm not a big fan of the BlackBerry. I don't like the way the application works.
Yeah.
I do use it. I'll friend people that I know, for example.
Twitter, probably.
Obviously Twitter. I have two Twitter applications on my phone. I use actually the Google apps the most.
Yeah.
So I use
yeah.
Google Search, Google Calendar, Google you know, mail, you know, all of, you know, the reader obviously is essential part of my existence to keep up with everything. So, I mean, those are, you know, it's not all app-based. A lot of it
yeah.
is web-based. So
yeah.
for me, when I advise companies, one of the critical things that I'm telling them is, you know, in terms of being iPhone and BlackBerry ready, it's not just about applications. It's also having mobile-enabled websites, because if you have a press release you want me to read and I can't read it, I'm probably not going to, like, bookmark it and then remember what the bookmark was, you know?
Yep, yep. Well, it's interesting because mobile is probably the fastest-growing access device in terms of people, you know, connecting online. I think the other than the private kinds of applications like text messaging and things that are very unique to the medium, people are for me, my mobile device is somewhat transparent in that I'm really using it to access the web, to access Twitter, to access whether it's blogs or Facebook or different. And so the social properties that I'm interacting with are very much the same, and I want them to be the same because I just see the mobile device as another way to do it. And so the more convenient those providers have made it for me to access that device, the better, because it just fits with my workflow. But really from a brand company kind of conversation monitoring, whether you engaged and put that picture on Flickr, you know, as a snap picture that you picked off your iPhone, or, you know, you uploaded it from your Nikon camera, doesn't really matter. It's still a piece of social content that you care about. So for us as a company, we actually are building a mobile interface because our clients do listening and engagement and workflow while they're not at their desk. So we're that's an important for us to extend our own product to mobile to make that convenient. But as far as social media, there isn't so much something, you know, there isn't a category of media that's kind of restricted to mobile. It's really more in the cloud, and the mobile device is just another door into that. And maybe you see it. I'd be interested in what you think of that, but that's kind of...
We only have a couple minutes left, but what I would say is what would be useful is as a proof point to companies that there are that the access points have changed. I think if we looked at, you know, other countries, you know, particularly the BRIC countries. So I've worked at a company where there was a BRIC strategy. So Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And, you know, people live and die by their phone. Their phone is their personal computer. So those sites that are optimized that have, you know, m.facebook.com or whatever those are, it would be nice to see a breakout of those as like an overlay or something just to, as a proof point possibly for other companies that are, you know, hesitant to make things adaptable. When in this time and space, my advice to clients that ask about, well, do I really need to do mobile? Yeah, you need to do it now because it's never been cheaper than ever. It's never been cheaper than it's ever been, at least in the last few years, to get web development done. So why not build that in to the process when it's cheaper, if you can possibly afford it? Or a lot of companies are just adding it as an additional feature. But I think you're exactly right. I think it's to the point of what I was saying earlier. It's a platform piece of the pie, where people don't really care, you know, as long as it works.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the disappointment of the Facebook application on my phone,
right,
is that I don't feel it works. It doesn't work very well. So
right.
In any event, it's been lovely speaking with you, Marcel. I thank you so
great.
Much for joining us. Again, Marcel Lebrun, who is the CEO of Radian6. If you haven't checked out his technology, please do, Radian6.com, and of course we'll be posting links to Radian6 as well as his blog and his Twitter feed on JenniferNeely.com shortly. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in to the A-List with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Be sure to tune in next week when our featured guest is Dan Rosenheim, who's the VP and News Director at the Bay Area CBS 5 KPIX. That's 1 week from today at noon Pacific. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show at jenniferlindsay.com. Have a great weekend.
Great speaking with you.